Good afternoon. If you were to go to the UCG's members website and you go to the sermon page, you would literally find thousands of sermons going back almost 20 years. And if you look through them, at times you will start to see a bit of a pattern. Several ministers over a period of time will be speaking on the same or a very similar subject. Now, of course, this is something you may expect to see around the holy days, which it does. But I've noticed another trend, well, at least it appears to me anyway, that over the last, say, year or so, there have been more sermons along a prophetic line. Or, like I said, it's at least that's the way it appears to me. But we are told that we are to be aware of the times we are living in, to notice the signs of the times we're living in, and God's Word tells us to do that. So today, I thought we would look at just one of those signs of the times that we are living in. If you would, turn to 2 Timothy chapter 3. Verses 1 and 2. It says this: "But know this, that in the last days perilous times will come." Verse 2, "For men will be lovers of themselves." Now this is what I want to focus on, so this is where I'm going to stop. Men will be lovers of themselves instead of loving God or even loving others. Their focus will be mainly on them. Now, when Jesus was asked what was the greatest commandment, he said this: "You shall love the Lord your God with all your heart, with all your soul, and with all your mind. This is the first and great commandment. And the second is like it: you shall love your neighbor as yourself. On these two commandments hang all the laws and the prophets." Oh, that can be found in Matthew 22, by the way. But on these two commandments lie all the commandments and all of the law. So it becomes a bit hard maybe to understand that all of God's law and all of God's commandments can be broken by one single letter word. And that word is I. And of course, if you want to expand that a little bit, you can go with me or myself as well. And if you like titles, that would be my title: Examining Me, Myself, and I. Now, when most people think of having no other God before God, or they think of idol worship, most people think of a little carved image of some animal or of some being. Or I guess it could be a big, doesn't have to be a little idol, it could be a big one. And then there are those who have thought it through just a little bit further and realized that it's not necessarily just an idol or something that's been carved out. I've heard it said that the pursuit of money and material goods has replaced the pursuit of God. So this would make materialism their new God, and that would be true. However, I think over the past several years, there's been a new trend, at least based on what you see on television or you hear in music or you see on social media sites, and that new God or that new idol would be self. You know, me, myself, or I is what seems to be what's important to most people. Self-worship has replaced the worship of God. Last year, 2014, the Webster Dictionary, the Oxford Dictionary, and other dictionaries added a new word to their dictionaries, and that was the word selfie. Now, most of you probably know what a selfie is. And for those of you who don't, here is the definition from the dictionary. It's a photograph that one has taken of oneself, typically with a smartphone and at arm's length, almost every one of them, and uploaded to a social media site. In November of 2013, the Oxford Dictionary people made this announcement. Today, Oxford Dictionaries announces selfie as their 2013 Word of the Year. The Oxford Dictionary Word of the Year is a word or expression that has attracted a great deal of interest during the year to date. Language research conducted by Oxford Dictionary editors reveal the frequency of the word selfie in the English language has increased by 17,000% since the same time of November 2012. Now, I do want to say this. If you have taken selfies and you have posted them on your Facebook or some other media site, this does not mean you have a problem. Unless you fall into some of these numbers, in these categories. And I'm not going to mention any names. The Guinness Book of World Records, most selfies in 1 hour, 1,449 selfies. This person calls herself the Selfie Queen. This is as of August last year. On her page, she has 12,000 selfies. And there's another man who, for the last several years, has been posting a new selfie every single day. And this guy has hundreds of them. And they're all basically the same picture. It's just his head. Sometimes he has a different colored shirt on. Sometimes it's daytime. Sometimes it's nighttime. But they look exactly the same, every one of them. He is about to start selling T-shirts with a picture of his selfie so that you can take a selfie wearing his selfie. Now, if you fall into these categories, now there may be some issues. You know, men and women will be lovers of themselves instead of lovers of God or lovers of other people. According to a study by Ohio State University professor Jesse Fox, he reported this. Men who post a lot of selfies to the web tend to exhibit higher levels of narcissism and psychopathic behavior. He says the self-esteem movement among children and younger adults has likely contributed to this increase in self-adoration. Many parents these days do everything they can to make their children feel good about themselves. The result has been an increase in self-love, unjustifiable personal exceptionalism. Another psychologist, Keith Campbell, says this: we are in the midst of a narcissistic epidemic. He said that narcissistic personality traits are on the rise faster than obesity in this country. Men will be lovers of themselves. Self-love or self-worship is not new. As we know, this was Satan's sin. He thought he could be, or thought he should be, as the Most High God. And he sinned. It was vanity. It was self-worship. My son Josh and I were just talking about this a couple weeks ago. That after Jesus had fasted for 40 days, Satan came to tempt him. And most people would say, well, yeah, he tempted him with food. Well, that was not the first thing he tempted him with. The first thing he said to him was, and this is in Matthew 4, by the way, he said to him, if you truly are the Son of God. So his first test was testing his pride and his vanity. Are you really who you say you are? And then he added, after that, turn these stones into bread. Now Jesus' response was not something of self-serving, self-worship. He simply quoted God. He didn't go back to, I'll show you who I am. Yeah, I'm who I say I am. Let me show you. He didn't do that. In Philippians 2, verse 3, says this: let nothing be done through selfish ambition or conceit, but in lowliness of mind, let each esteem others better than himself. Esteem others better than ourselves. This is something that Jesus Christ, our personal example, who we're to be like, This is what he did throughout Scripture. He esteemed others higher than himself. You know, when the soldiers came to arrest Jesus in the garden, again, they came and he said, "Who are you looking for?" And they said, "We are looking up for Jesus of Nazareth." Again, he didn't respond with, "Don't you know who I am?" Or any type of pride. He just simply said, "I am he, and if it's me you're after, let these other men go." He was more concerned with the men around him. He gave himself up. He surrendered to them and asked that the other men be let go. He was looking out for others. His concern was for others, not self. I know I talked about this once before, but I think this is important. When Stephen was being stoned and was about to die, he cried out to God saying, "Lord, do not charge them with this sin." He was looking out for others. Now I bring this out because I think there's something important here. Most people know the account of Jesus dying and saying, "Forgive them, for they know not what they're doing." Most people are not as familiar with Stephen's account. And here's why I think it's important. And of course, we don't agree with this argument, but you can understand someone making this argument that, well, Jesus was God. He was God in the flesh. He was God in the Old Testament, so of course he would have the strength to say something like that. And like I said, we don't buy that argument, but here what happens is Stephen's account completely destroys that argument. Because Stephen was always man. He was never anything else. He was never God. He had God's Spirit, but he was never God. So what this does is, what it shows us is that there's no excuse. We too can have that kind of love for other people to where we can forgive no matter what, if we truly love and have or esteem others higher than we do ourselves. I read to the beginning the two great commandments. You shall love the Lord your God with all your heart, with all your soul, with all your mind, and you shall love your neighbor as yourself. Right now I want to focus on the second of those two. Or actually what I want to focus on is what it does not say. And what it does not say is that we are to love our neighbors instead of ourselves. Or that we are to love our neighbors more than ourselves. It just says we are to love our neighbors as ourselves. There is a right way and a wrong way to love oneself. And what we've looked at up until this point has been a self-serving type of love. But there is a proper way to love your own life. You are to have the same love for life or respect for life for every human made, for every man ever created or was born. That includes ourselves. Every person was designed with the potential to be in God's kingdom. And no one was ever created as waste. They all have the potential to be there. Even people we find it hard to get along with. You know, we were all created for the same purpose and we all have the same opportunities. And we all have to have the same respect and love for life, for one another and for ourselves. Proverbs 19 verse 8 says this, "He who gets wisdom loves his soul. He who keeps understanding will find good." It's talking about godly wisdom, and it's talking about godly understanding. There's a right way and a wrong way to love one's own life. The wrong way is self-serving, looking for self-worth, or looking to have a high self-esteem. A right way is a love for the life that God has given us and a love for the life that God is offering us. And to have a proper love and respect for life because we are a part of God's creation. Look, if you would, over in Psalms. Psalms 139. Psalms 139, and we're going to start in verse 13. David is saying, verse 13, "For you formed my inward parts. You covered me in my mother's womb. I will praise you, for I am fearfully and wonderfully made. Marvelous are your works, and that my soul knows very well. My frame was not hidden from you when I was made in secret and skillfully wrought in the lowest parts of the earth. Your eyes saw my substance being yet unformed, and in your book they are all written, the days fashioned for me, when as yet there was none of them." David knew and understood God's work in him, and that he was a creation of God, and that he needed to take that serious and to take care of what God had given him. And this was written for all of us. It wasn't written just for David. It's here in the Bible for all of us to see and to all of us to understand. The right kind of love for self is why we examine ourselves. And with Passover just a few weeks away, this is what we're doing. We examine ourselves, but not in a self-serving, not in a self-worshipping way, but in the right way. We examine ourselves to see if we are serving God or to see if we are serving ourselves. Are we doing the things that we need to do, or are we doing the things that we want to do? God has a wonderful plan of life for us all. It's a plan made with love. It's a plan about love. It was a plan created from God, who is love. And it's a plan that I would love to be a part of. And I would love to see each and every one of you a part of that as well. Have a great Sabbath.